Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Leaderching. My guest today is Milagros Pozo Sosa. She is a psychologist and has devoted most of her life to helping others. Hi, Mili. How are you?
Hi, Mirta. How are you? Everything's fine here.
Excellent. Happy to have you as a guest on this podcast. For full transparency, Mili is actually also a member of Leaderching. She has been a co-founding member and is part of the weekly Leaderching Record podcast in Spanish. But as we already had a conversation with Miguel, who is the third member of the co-founding members of our initiative, we thought it would be good to have a conversation with Mili. So once again, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Mirta.
So, let's dive directly into it, Mili. What did you dream of becoming as a child?
You're going to laugh about this, but actually, I wanted to be a cashier. The one that went to the supermarket and press all the buttons and said, you know, your total is this much and you have to pay. And I love that. That was my dream. I never wanted to be a nurse. I never wanted to be a policeman or anything. I wanted to be a cashier. And I don't know why. Well, obviously, it never came true. I never worked as a cashier, but it was always my dream. I still like cashier machines when I go to the supermarket and I see it. And I just find them fascinating. And I don't know why.
That's quite interesting. And well, I had the luck or maybe just the chance to be a cashier myself for many years, as you know. I think actually at the beginning of it, when I did it, it was kind of entertaining because you met so many people and a lot of people are really nice, actually. But it's also quite a repetitive task. So I must admit, I'm happy that I didn't need to do this for many years. But so let's maybe figure out, so, okay, this was your dream when you were a child. You then went to school, high school, graduated, and so on. How did you choose psychology?
Eventually, I started helping people. My family is always into helping people, and we're, as you know, my family is also a family of educators, of teachers. So my first choice when I was in high school was to be a teacher for children with special needs. I wanted to be a teacher for kids with Down syndrome, specifically. Mm-hmm. As I grew up, I just realized that I could help a lot of people, a lot more people, if I was a psychologist. So I eventually chose psychology. But my first choice actually was being a teacher. I love being with kids and kids with special needs. I actually worked as a psychologist in a school for kids with neurologic disorders.
Yes, I remember very well those times. And I'm always impressed when you share stories about children and the progress they can actually make with the right, teachers, educators, and psychologists around. I think it's quite beautiful to know that children and any type of child can actually progress in its development.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's also important to realize that even if they don't develop as much as a regular child with a regular intelligence or abilities, they will develop as much as they can if you encourage them, if you stimulate them, if you support them and be there for them. So the goal actually was to give them the best chance they can so that they can be the best person they can be and as independent as they can be. And that's the goal actually here, you know.
So Millie, maybe just an additional question for this area, because I think our audience may be interested, and I for sure was interested before you told me. But you're living in Lima, in Peru, in a country where there is not so many resources dedicated to children with special needs. What do you think, you know, can we do, or society overall, even in countries with limited resources?
Wow, that's a big question. For starters, you know, education laws should change. We are supposed to be an inclusive school system, but we're actually not, because the teachers in the school system of the of the national school system are not prepared for that kind of student.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think there should be more access to information. People
mm-hmm.
should know that having a kid with disabilities or different abilities, it's not the end of the world. That they have chances, that they will develop, that they can be independent, you know, and that depends on you, on how much you dedicate your time and your forces and energy into creating the best environment for your kid to develop. Sometimes the state is not going to support you, but you have to fight. And now with the internet, we have access to information. Unfortunately, not everybody in Lima, even in Lima, that it's the capital of Peru, has that access to information. And I think that it would be one of the best, the first things I would do is access to information, so that they know the real chances and they know the real statistics, and not think that they have a disability because they didn't eat right, or they have guilt because they, I don't know, they were drinking when she supposedly got pregnant, or whatever myth, you know, or tradition they are told by the family, you know. Some
mm-hmm.
people actually think that it's a punishment for them
yeah.
not being good daughters. So it's quite a fight here, because cultural tradition is very strong, and it's still very strong. It's still going from generation to generation, you know. And that's something we have to fight with information and real information, information that they can actually understand, you know. And that's
mm-hmm.
not available here.
I think you're really, what you're saying is so important, because we have also talked about other, you know, issues we are facing in Peru, and that's kind of, I think at some point we've always agreed that access to information might be the most powerful action to take in order to really get also just normal people, right, from the street to understand the different issues. And I think in this case, it's as you say, very, very important. One thing that you had shared with me during one of our discussions was also the fact that in Peru, there is still also, you know, the view of many, also other children, but also adults, on children with special needs, which is not always kind and understanding, but there is more
mm-hmm.
of mockery and exclusion. Obviously, I can understand that the first thing is to get the right information so that we understand that this is actually, you know, that those children are just different. What do you think, or how have you faced that during, you know, your work? What did you try to do?
Actually, give them the right information, you know, telling them that it's not the end of the world, that they didn't do anything wrong. I actually had a patient that the nurse told her that because she had no breast milk, that there were studies that the kid was going to be autistic, that autism was related to not breastfeeding, to breastfeeding. And she was terrified, and she didn't want to connect to the kid, and she didn't want to, you know, and that's not fair because they're not that. I mean, if she shows me the paper where they say autism is related to breastfeeding, I can understand, and I'll say, okay, this fact is true, or this fact is not yet proved, or the amount of people used in the study is not big enough, or whatever. But how can you fight a nurse that works in a hospital and tells you that? And she's supposed to know. You know, misinformation is here everywhere, even from the people you're supposed to trust for good information. You know, they're trying to force you to do the things that the state thinks that are good for the country, but they are not realizing that not everybody, not every woman is the same, and not every man is the same. So
I think.
for what works for ones might not work for others, and that's the problem. You can't make a rule, or you can make a plan according to what you think it should be. You have to test and real and accept and see your population and see what works for them. You know,
Yes, that's very
fear
interesting, I
is a
think.
big part.
Yeah, so I think
Fear is a big part too.
we're still talking about the lack of education, obviously, or the belief that sometimes telling a lie to coerce people to do what they want to might be a good solution. You work in a low-income neighborhood in Peru, better said in Lima. And I know that the day-to-day reality can be very harsh. How do you embrace all those things? How do you still, motivate, positive? What is it that you do to kind of cope with those challenges that you have to go through? On a regular basis, just due to your job.
Sometimes, eventually I've learned to leave my job at work, you know, and not think about it. But sometimes I do think about it, and I try to figure out ways to manage or how to approach a problem, you know, and it's hard sometimes because for me, what I've learned, and for me with access to information, I can't understand why there are still so many young adults now that they have internet. I didn't have internet and I had information. And now that they have the internet and they have the access to information, even if they pay for half an hour, go to a cabin or whatever, they still don't have that information. They still believe the myth, or they're still afraid of asking. And sometimes I just realize that education and psychoeducation, emotional education helps them. You know, telling them to ask for a hug. Telling them, sometimes a kid will actually say, my mom doesn't hug me. Can you hug me? I was like, yeah, just come here. Now with the COVID, it's different because you have to really be careful because you want to be you don't want to get sick. But sometimes you have to risk it. I had a lady that lost her husband, and she wasn't hugged. She didn't want anybody to hug her because she was afraid she was going to contaminate others. So when I hugged her, and I really risked it there, she cried and she felt that that's what I needed. I just needed to be touched. People don't touch the kids now. People are just like, hey, yeah, hello, how was your day? Good, yeah. No hugs, no kissing, no playing, no goofing around, no going out. Now, especially with the COVID, you can't go out and spend time with your kids. So sometimes just walking and taking time for yourself. You know, I realized that I have to have time for myself, even if it's just, I don't know, going out and sitting in the park and just watching nothing. It's my time and I do what I want. And that's how I just leave work behind and go home and keep going, you know? It's hard. It's very hard with the COVID here. It's really hard because you have to be extra careful where I work because there are a lot of people dying there. So you have to be very aware of where you go and what you touch and the alcohol and the washing the hands and everything. I feel that if I'm not there, maybe it won't make a difference as a global difference, but maybe it will make a difference for one people that will go, that will have the time or the money, you know, and go and talk and say, I'm afraid, I don't want to get sick, I don't want to die, you know, and that's important.
So, no, and I, you know, I'm always at awe as to how, you know, Korea
yes.
are in the day-to-day things you do, and not only now during COVID, but you have been going to very low-income neighborhoods for a very, very long time, and they are not very safe, and you stay there long hours, go home when it's dark. So I always think it's amazing and very impressive what you do. I'm just thinking maybe a related topic of what we are just discussing is, what do you do with the anger? And I know that you and me have had kind of WhatsApp conversations where we were like just so mad at, for instance, now during the pandemic, people not taking measures, not protecting themselves to protect others. How do you manage anger?
During COVID, I used to eat chocolate. A lot of chocolate. Now that I'm, well, that was while I was, with the quarantine and everything, we were locked down.
Yeah.
But now I just, I try to talk to people and Zoom has been a big help. I mean, it's kept us together during this lockdown. But
yes.
It's also talking to people and saying, I'm angry because of this, you know,
mm-hmm.
accepting that
mm-hmm.
the fact that I'm angry and I'm upset and I have a right to be because it's my emotion and it's valid. What
mm-hmm.
isn't valid is that I go and I start shouting to everybody, you going out without your mask are the reason we are like this, you know. That's not valid because I'm expressing my anger, attacking somebody. But I can
mm-hmm.
say I'm angry, and I'm angry because of this, and I'm angry because people don't take care, and I'm angry because, I don't know, I want to travel, or I'm angry because I can't see my family, and I'm angry, and I'm upset. And if I need to, I cry.
Yeah.
You know, because crying is the way the body just let go of that sadness inside that causes so many problems in the long run, you know.
Yeah, seems like a good advice.
Crying is not for weak, it's for the brave, actually.
Yeah, that's even better advice, and I hope that many of those that are listening to this conversation will, take it to their hearts. And I must say, for a very long time, as you know, I wasn't able to cry. So I'm learning. I'm trying to become better at that. Not always very easy. So maybe let me just ask, as you know, when we started and we founded LeaderChain, one of the major objectives was to share about the topic of leadership. And I'm wondering if you could give us some, insights into what you believe leadership is, or you have, if you have seen people show very good leadership skills. What is it that, from your perspective in particular, because you face maybe people that when you talk about leadership, they're just like, what is it you mean? What is it? What is leadership at all, right? It's not like you can go with this word, which is for many still very vague. I was wondering what you were thinking when you think about leadership in your current role and with the patients you try to help.
Well, leadership actually here in Peru is for regular people, not entrepreneurs and enterprises, for regular people, people that work in a market or have their own mini businesses, is the one that fights the most to get what they want. The one that argues and gets what that permit you needed, or the one that fights and talks better. And that's a leader here. The one that gets what you need or what you want. I think a leader also needs to be someone educated in a way, not of books, but of emotions, so that you can know what your people need. I know what my population, the people that I work with, need. I know they need attention. I know they need comfort. I know they need just talking and being listened and not being judged. And I think that a leader knows what their group needs. It's not only about winning, it's about giving them what they need. And if they need a hug, or if they need a day off, or if they need some extra time to do what you wanted them to do because they are slow, or they didn't get it right, they have to correct, then give them that. A leader is understanding. A leader is somebody who knows they have to get the job done, but know how to help somebody if they are not able to finish what they needed to finish.
I like the approach of saying that a leader, besides having the capabilities, right, which don't need necessarily to be gained at university, they can also just be, experiences that you just acquire through work, right, through life, through your own personal history. So I think that's very clear to me. I like the aspect that you raised that people should kind of have a sort of emotional intelligence, right? So that they have to show empathy, that you have to do, you kind of get results, but through the team, through people, and kind of adapting to each one's as far as possible, right? I know that sometimes things need to get done and then they just need to get done, but still, it seems to me we need to be able to figure out everyone's strengths and then build on those to the team somehow.
Yes, that's very important. Not everybody is perfect at what they think they need to be perfect. Some people might be perfect, writing. Another might be perfect at creating, and somebody else will be the one that expresses that idea. A team is a group of people with different abilities, and somebody that guides them into gaining or winning what they want to win or earning what they want to earn, depending on the approach of the group, you know. That's a good leader, you know. Learn what you're good at and what you need to learn. Try to learn, and if you can't, then ask for help. And a good leader will help you.
And I think also a good leader will ask for help himself or herself, right? So I think that's part of the self-awareness thing. Now, I'm conscious of time. And as you know, we still have to cover the second part of what leadership is, and that's the coaching part, right? And with the coaching part, one of the things that we had in mind when we created leadership was to do something that would help others understand what gender equality is. And I was wondering, because, and I know that we've spoken several times about this, and as you know, me not being permanently in Peru, I sometimes struggle to understand why the mentality hasn't evolved so much with respect to the topic of gender. And I wanted, you know, you to share a little bit of what you think and what, you know, and how difficult maybe it is still today to talk about certain things in our culture, and how difficult it is to actually help people, right? To help people, to help women who might be in difficult situations.
Okay, the coaching part is so hard sometimes, because you have to be somebody for the people to believe you or to allow you into their lives. You have to be somebody they trust or they think they can trust. You know, women are still looked as are still the ones that have to do the work here, because they are taught to be like that. I mean, a good wife will work and keep the house clean and keep the kids perfect. And that's something that, I don't know, like pre-programmed in your brain. Now we're fighting that. Yes, it's something that it's pre-programmed in your brain. Here in Peru, it is like that.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, but it is, like, yeah.
And some jobs are still seen as men jobs in order for women, you know. Psychology itself, when I wanted to work and we were with the nonprofit organization and we will go into this small, places where people lived in the in the high parts of Lima, in the Chantis, you know, and we will go there with the police, you know, go inside with the police, help do the campaign, and then get out with the police, because we couldn't go by ourselves because it was not safe. A lot of people would actually say, my family, my mom would say, why are you doing that? And I said, why not? Why not? Why is that only for men? Why can't a girl take risks? Why can't I do what I want to do if I'm taking all the precautions to do it? You know, it's like, no, man has to protect women, you know? And you can't take chances. Yeah. And if I expect a man to take care of me, God, he's got a big job ahead of him, because I do what I want when I want to, as long as I take precautions. I learned that being afraid only makes me weak. That if I know where I'm going and what I'm going to do, and I'm taking all the precautions, then I can do it. You know, I'm not going to go into a dangerous part of Lima midnight just because I want to help somebody alone. No, I'm not going to do that. Maybe when I was young, I would actually think about doing it, but not anymore. I know that I have to have a plan, and I need resources, and I need somebody else to come with me, and I know that I have to do that. You know, so sometimes you look for policemen, and sometimes you look for, I don't know, the leaders in the asentamientos humanos, what we call it here, you know, in the poor neighborhood here, you know, and they help you get in and get out. That's how you help people, and that's how you counsel people, and that's how you give them information.
It's really interesting that, you know, I've asked you questions about yourself, but and this is just for our audience to understand who you are. Whenever I ask you how you are and how you do things and how you cope with challenges, you just turn things around and explain to me. And this is not only today, but you always end up telling me how you're helping someone else. And I think it's amazing because,
yeah,
like, at the end of the day, and I know that you also struggle, as we all do, obviously. But I think it's one of you, you know, and I can say this because not only are we best friends, but also we are family. So I can say this very openly. But it's really interesting how asking you about the gender question ends up being a narration about how you help others. But I understand from what you're saying that, unfortunately, there is still a lot of work to do in a country like Peru. And we obviously know that that's not only the case there, but there is many, many countries, including highly developed countries, where women still need help and where the gender topic cannot just be dismissed. At Leaderching, we're trying not only to talk about gender, but about diversity in a sense of, like, you know, all type of differences are to be regarded as something that need to be regarded as differences and not as disabilities. So to conclude our conversation, Millie, as you know, the question that comes now is, what would you tell yourself if you could talk to Millie when she was 20 years old?
I would tell her that everything is going to be okay, that eventually you're going to find the way to be happy and to feel happy with what you're doing and how you do it, and that you don't need to be ashamed of doing things that people think are wrong, but you know they're not. You know, and just because I was born in a way in a social group where a lot of things are expected of me, you know, a regular job, a 9-to-5 job, and the suits and the nice car, and that doesn't mean that I have to do that. You know, I tried it and it didn't work, and I'm an independent girl, and I do what I need to do to be happy and help others, because I think in a way that's how I'm happy, knowing that somebody, that maybe that day somebody's feeling better just because I listened, you know, and somebody's not being rejected just because I didn't tell her, no, you're wrong, because judging is so, it's the first way to discriminate people.
Definitely.
Even if you don't say so.
Yeah.
Even if you don't say so. Just judging in your head, it's a way of discriminating people and creating a wall. And I fought so hard to break that wall in my head, you know? And eventually I would tell Millie in her 20s, you know, have fun, it's going to be okay.
Sounds good. I think that's an excellent closing for our conversation. I couldn't agree more with you. The expectations of society or of our families, independent on what they're based, I think are what they are. There are expectations, but nobody actually obliges us, or even if they want to oblige us, it is our choice to decide what we want to do and how we want to do it. So I think that's an excellent advice in closing. Thanks again so much for taking the time today. I know that it's a Sunday, and, you know, we could have both been just relaxing and just listening to music or seeing something. But very much appreciate it. Stay safe and talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for having
You're
me.
so
It was about time we
welcome. Yeah.
talked.
So thank you, everyone. Don't forget to
Yeah.
give us a thumbs up and listen to Leader Ching every weekend. Bye, everyone.
I hope you liked this episode of Leader Ching in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!
Hola con todos y bienvenidos a otro episodio de Leader Ching Reco. Como todos los miércoles me acompaña Milagros Pozo Sosa y Marco Miguel Paz Rivas. Hola chicos, ¿qué tal?
¿Cómo estás, Mirta?
Hola Mirta, hola Mili, hola a todos.
Bueno, excelente, gracias por acompañarme. Va a parecer repetitivo, pero la serie de esta semana que queremos recomendar viene de Dinamarca. Y no es porque ninguno de nosotros tenga una relación con Dinamarca en especial. Esta vez en realidad la que nos recomendó esta serie fue Claudia Hurtado Rivas, que es mi hermana y prima de Miguel y prima de Mili. O sea, que todo queda en familia. Pero creo que se van a dar cuenta del porqué de la recomendación cuando Miguel nos cuente un poquito de qué se trata.
Bueno, gracias. La serie es inevitable que la tengan que ver. No se van a lamentar de tener un tiempo dedicado para esta serie que le va a encantar. Como sabemos, Dinamarca, pues, tienen la política del estado de bienestar y todo eso es un costo, ¿no? Todo conlleva un costo. Nosotros, bien cierto, estamos recién tratando de saber cómo es el desarrollo del bien común y no llegamos a nada y estamos perdidos todavía en la parte de la teoría de Estado-Nación. Bueno, Dinamarca nos lleva bastante, habiendo sido un reino, o sigue siendo un reino, pero que perdió algunos territorios durante su época, bueno, de los vikingos que conocemos todos. Pero lo que ha quedado y lo que resalta en esta serie, en el estado de bienestar, es los sacrificios que se realizan en cada uno de los personajes, porque cada uno de los personajes inmiscuido en política hace un sacrificio de forma particular en el bien de todos, ¿no? Tenemos la principal, la protagonista, ¿no? La principal, que es Birgit. Vamos a llamar Birgit porque todo el mundo, así sea la primera ministra, se llaman de forma coloquial con el primer nombre. Es una característica del país. Es increíble eso porque en un momento de la serie están gritando de todo y al rato están conversando lo más normal, separan muy bien lo que es políticamente correcto, lo políticamente dicho, con la parte personal y afectiva, ¿no? Creo que marca bastante la personalidad como país. Los temas que trata esta serie es increíble. Esta serie, bueno, lo está relanzando, lo han vuelto a lanzar Netflix, es una joya, como lo están diciendo todos los críticos, es una joya escondida, perdida por ahí en el catálogo, ha sido realizada hace 10 años, 3 temporadas. Netflix va a ser la cuarta temporada, con los mismos protagonistas, y los temas que narra son increíbles, ¿no? Nos estamos proyectando hace 10 años atrás. Fuera del estado de bienestar, tienen de igualdad de género, la equidad de género, el machismo en alguna zona de ellos, las primeras migraciones que hay de África hacia Europa, la intervención de alguna forma de Europa en algunas partes de Medio Oriente y de África para resolver conflictos, según ellos, a petición de ellos, lo de Afganistán como apoyo a Estados Unidos en controlarlo de una zona hasta que se vuelva democráticamente viable el país, intermediar entre países ficticios sobre conflictos internos, la relación que tuvieron con Groenlandia y internamente, primero la relación con la prensa, Hay Katrín, Torben, esta gente que trabaja supuestamente para el canal del Estado. Y dos cosas súper interesantes. La primera, la relación con Casper, que es su asesor. Tiene una vida muy aparte, no se llamaba Casper, tenía otro nombre, tienen que ver el episodio es una genialidad, es un episodio oscuro. Es en la segunda temporada, y creo que es el sexto capítulo. Y lo otro que marca es los sacrificios que por el estado de bienestar, por cumplir con lo que se tiene que hacer, por hacer las cosas como que tienen que hacerse para el desarrollo del país, se sacrifica a veces lo familiar. Y eso es lo que le pasa a la protagonista en su relación con Philip, su esposo, y con sus dos hijos. Bueno, eso tiene un desenlace de rompimiento de la unión familiar. Y se crean, obviamente, nuevos lazos entre él y otra, o su nueva pareja, y ella abocada totalmente a ser primera ministra. Pero hay un problema con uno de los hijos, ella tiene que tomar una licencia para el apoyo con ella. Pero es una súper serie interesante de principio a fin. Todos los temas que abarca, habiendo sido hace 10 años, de verdad que parece tan contemporánea como ahora. La producción es impecable y las actuaciones iguales. Tienen que verla.